We'll wrap up Media Day here on a solo episode with me, Matt Moore. We'll talk about the Western Conference and what Media Day stuff we learned, including cut Zion and thick Kawhi and all sorts of other stuff around the Nuggets competitors for a Western Conference title. All that and more on Locked On Nuggets.
You are Locked On Nuggets, your daily Denver Nuggets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On Nuggets, your daily Denver Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On Network, your team every day. Thanks for joining us and making us your first listen every day. We are free and available on all platforms, including YouTube, where you can join all the great folks that are hanging out with me, Matt Moore, today. Glad to have you guys with us on a Tuesday. If you missed it, Adam and I did a whole show late last night breaking down Media Day, giving you the insights. The vibes were immaculate, as they always say. The vibes really were great. It was awesome. We gave you in-depth detail on all the players. We're going to wrap up today with a few more things that I wanted to get to about where the Nuggets were, some commentary on a few other tidbits. We're going to talk about some other stuff I noticed from Media Day around the NBA and particularly the Western Conference to kind of give you some perspective on where the other teams are, who's trending up, who's trending down, those types of things. And in the last segment, I asked for some questions on Twitter and y'all were kind enough to reply. So we'll get to those plus whatever comments come up in the comments on YouTube, which is the best way for you to support the show. If you can, go ahead and go to YouTube and give us a like and subscribe and turn on notifications. You can join the show and join folks like Alec and Josh and Samuel and all sorts of stuff in there, all sorts of guys in there hanging out with us every day. Most shows during the season will probably be around this time between 9:30 and 10:30 Mountain Time, probably 9:30, I think, is the time that we've settled on. There may be some late ones this week as Adam may feel like he wants to get one done if there's something really interesting that happens at practice. So be on lookout for that. And the only way for you to be able to catch the information as soon as you can is to turn on those notifications. Josh has real guy hangout in here. Certainly would love to get some more gender diversity in here, but that's how that goes. I'm so glad to have all you guys with me on a Tuesday. Let's go ahead and start with some of the things that I noticed from Media Day, some more things that really stood out. So one of the things that really reasserted itself, and I've talked about this all offseason, but it really is kind of apparent, the positional flexibility of this team, which I think is going to be key. One of the issues that they had in terms of depth, not just last season, but really the last three seasons in Denver, whenever they suffered injuries, was that they would have good depth at one position and that position would not get hurt. And then they would have not so much depth at another position, and that'd be the one that would suffer injuries. So, okay, we only have one, we've got two small forwards. Well, one's out. Okay, so you have one small forward and now you're trying to fit that in. We only have so many point guards. Oh, well, Jamal got hurt. He's got an ankle or whatever before the major injury. What are we going to do? You know, Monte fixed a lot of that. The flexibility on this team is huge. So Adam asked Bruce Brown kind of like what he sees himself as a position wise, even though position's so fluid. And he was like, I'm 1 through 5. Like he just said like 1 through 5. And that's true. Like Bruce Brown really is a 1 through 5 type of player where, you know, if you're matching him up against Rudy Gobert, that's going to be tough, even though Rudy can't make a hook shot. But like on lobs and stuff, that'd be tough. But small ball units, Bruce Brown can defend there. He can defend pretty much anybody. If you look at Bones' ability to play both on ball and off ball as a secondary on ball creator, which has become one of the more important positions in the NBA, that's crucial because you can play him with Jamal. You can play him as backup to Jamal. If you need to move him to one and play KCP at two, if Jamal's sitting, you can do that. Bones' ability to play either guard spot with his shooting and on ball ability, he's not just a spot up shooter and he's not just a pure point distributor. That's really key. I think Monte did really well in this aspect as well, but Bones' ability to do both of those things in a different, more dynamic way, I think really is important. KCP, I think, honestly, is another good example of this where, all right, let's say that you want to play Bones and Jamal together for matchup reasons. You need the offense. You can slot KCP in at three if you're facing a smaller, small forward, which a lot of teams do run. That positional flexibility is huge. Zeke Nnaji, having had all that muscle we talked about last night with him being so jacked, is really, I think, key here. If you need to switch Zeke Nnaji onto threes, you can do that on an off-ball screen mechanism. If you need Zeke Nagy to be the primary defender, if the best pick and roll combo is at the four, you can do that. Think about Atlanta, right? So you can put Zeke Nagy at four in minutes where John Collins is on the floor, and that's a pretty good matchup. Like Zeke Nagy versus John Collins with the size that Zeke's put on, with the muscle he's put on, that's a pretty good combo. Five is difficult, but with five, you're really talking about positional flexibility in terms of being able to go small. Can you go small? The Suns couldn't do that last year. They doubled down and tripled down on going big. They had JaVale and Bismack and Ayton. They went super big, and they missed Dario Saric and their ability to kind of downsize. Teams were able to go small and hurt them, not just the Mavericks because of COVID and all that, but just throughout the season. That was a weak point I kind of identified, and I was worried about the Suns in those contexts. The Nuggets don't have that kind of issue where, look, their small ball lineups are never going to be as good as their big lineups because they have Nikola Jokic. But in terms of the bench units, if the opponent is running out of a small ball lineup, if they're playing the Suns and the Suns do go to Saric at five versus in the time where Jokic is on his resting schedule, they're going to be fine. They're going to be okay. You can play Jeff Green versus Dario Saric. You can play Zeke Nagy versus Dario Saric. That capability when teams don't play a five is going to be really big. So that really stood out to me that, you know, that was a conversational point upon media. The Nuggets mentioned it. It's going to be really good. We had no resolution on Calvin Booth's extension with the Nuggets. That could be announced any day. So I don't tend to worry about this until if we get to like midseason and if it's Christmas and they haven't announced it yet, I'm going to be like, what's up? I would imagine Singer will be all over that. So as always, follow Mike Singer on Twitter at MSinger and keep an eye on that. We'll obviously have our ears to the ground. I don't necessarily think there's any sort of reason for concern. There's no lingering tension there. GMs also don't necessarily make a big fuss about it. It doesn't really do them any good to go to the media and be like, why don't I have an extension? You don't want to be the squeaky wheel. You have to deal with all the squeaky wheels. It doesn't benefit you. But, you know, the implication from Kroenke at his press conference was that it would be dealt with pretty shortly and kind of like a don't worry. And then instead, that really hasn't happened. So still a question mark there in terms of Calvin Booth getting extended as well as the rest of the front office. The practice facility. I want to circle back on this point. So Michael Malone said he liked going away to San Diego because when you have a bunch of new players, it forms this like you're around each other all the time, the kind of bunker mentality. But he said also court availability. When we have more than two courts, we'll stay in Denver. I'm not willing to say that this is an embarrassing point. I would say that there is a reason teams have flaunted their new practice facilities so much. This really does matter to players. So here's a good example. Cleveland, not exactly the most like glamour market in the world, right? Cleveland has one north of the city out in the burbs, tucked away in this little quiet area. You turn down this road that's got like, it's basically in the middle of the woods. You turn down it and there's this really nice facility there. And the facilities are massive. It means that you get a theater to watch games in. You've got all your personalized stuff in there. And these are perks that the players don't necessarily need. But that stuff is also not, it shouldn't hurt the fans in terms of raising ticket prices or whatever else. That's something actually I should make a note to watch is whether they build a practice facility and then jack up things for the fans. Regardless, these teams are making enough money. Like this really just shouldn't be a thing. The justification has kind of been they're waiting on a bunch of development stuff. And maybe there's legal complications with the real estate side that I'm not aware of. The Nuggets need to get this resolved. When your coach is openly saying like, I don't feel like we can hold practice. We can't do practice at our facility. So we're going to go to San Diego. And you lose some of that. I think it's actually a problem. Look, the Nuggets practice facility is fine to me on the whatever floor of Ball Arena because I get to see like one hundredth of it. But I understand why the players feel it's short. Let me put it this way. It is less impressive than the old Warriors facility that they used to use in Oakland at the Marriott. That's how I would kind of put that. So that's a concern. And the final point before we take a break, defensive coverages. So Aaron Gordon made mention of this, and a couple of the other players did too. They said that they're not expecting a lot of changes to the defensive coverages. That is concerning to me right off the bat. Now, we haven't gotten into practice, and I didn't get a chance to ask Malone about it. I will say I do think that this team is leaning a lot towards the better approach for the Nuggets long term is to manage the effort level on defense in the regular season by playing drop. At the level coverage, which I've talked a lot about, which the Nuggets were really successful with a couple of years ago, is taxing, exhausting, and it's considered to be gimmicky. The players don't have a lot of confidence in it. Like, they think they should be able to play drop and just execute it well enough to get stops. I don't understand this. If you play drop in the playoffs, you're giving Damian Lillard space to shoot. If you play drop in the playoffs, you're giving Steph Curry space to shoot. If you play drop in the playoffs, you're giving whatever. The Warriors present different problems because if you blitz them and Curry does get the pass out to Draymond, you've got 4-on-3 and it's game over. But honestly, that's a pass that Curry struggles with. If the Nuggets are going to stick with a primarily drop coverage scheme, which they did last season, and the assistants that installed that are now on other teams, I'm still going to have a lot of concerns. Like, I'm going to have a lot of concerns about the defensive capacity if they're not a little bit more flexible. The best teams in the league defensively, if you want to be that top five defense, if you want to hold up to that standard of being a top five defense, you're going to have to run a lot of coverages because all of the top five defenses in the NBA do that. Miami runs zone. They run switch and they run drop. Boston runs switch and they run zone. But they also put a lot of pressure on the ball handler. It is very difficult anymore to see top five drop coverage defenses. A good example of this is that Rudy Gobert is literally the most impactful defensive player since Dwight Howard. And the Jazz defense slid off even with Rudy. Like, we can all joke about Rudy and how Jokic owns him, and I think that that's all fair. Rudy is objectively the best drop defender in league history. Nobody's ever done it better. I don't think he's the best defender in league history, let's be clear. But at this specific coverage, no one's better at it. I've done the film work. No one's better at it. And if you can't build a top five defense every year with that kind of anchor, I don't know how the Nuggets are going to get there if that's their primary coverage. So I do think it's worth mentioning just off the bat, I have some concerns about the game plan from a slightly new assistant coaching staff going into the season. Let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the other teams in the Western Conference and what they look like as we get a better sense of what Media Day was like around the league. We'll do that when we come back on Locked On Nuggets. But first, I need to tell you about BetOnline. BetOnline.net is your number one source for football betting info this season. Find all the latest player developments, team matchups, news, podcasts, and in-depth articles and analysis on every game you can find. And as always, BetOnline remains your continued source for all your sports wagering information with live betting and up-to-the-minute scores for every sport out there. I haven't bet the Broncos versus the Raiders yet, but I'm really thinking about it. The Broncos stock is at an all-time low. The Raiders stock is equally low because they're 0-3, but the Raiders are favored. The Broncos have found ways to win. And honestly, like, part of this is I do genuinely think that if you look at it, this line, the last time I checked, is still -2.5 for the Raiders. If it doesn't go over the key number of 3, that means the Sharps are anchoring it to the dog. Somebody on a podcast I listened to who's really smart on beating the lines with Gil Alexander was talking about how if a line's -2.5, you should probably bet the dog because that means the Sharps are holding on to it. So I may wind up betting on the Broncos on the money line to beat the Raiders this weekend. The fastest and easiest way to check on all your favorite games and events is at BetOnline, including MLB, MMA, boxing, and golf. Head to BetOnline.net and use your mobile device to learn more. BetOnline, where the game starts. We'll be right back on Locked On Nuggets. Back here on Locked On Nuggets, thanks for joining us and making us part of your day. Really appreciate it. Again, if you have not, give us a 5-star review. I've been very kind to the Broncos. I deserve your love. I deserve your love. I have not been a trolling jerk about any of the stuff that we've seen. I haven't made any clock management jokes. I deserve your love. Give me those 5-star reviews. Hit the like and subscribe button on YouTube. It's the best way for you to support the show. You can join folks that are in the chats asking questions, getting in the conversation. It's a great time in the old Denver Nuggets, Locked On Nuggets chat every day on YouTube. All right, I want to talk about a little bit about what we've seen around the league yesterday. And I was at media day for the Nuggets, obviously, so I had to keep an eye on some of this and make notes as I was going, and it's a little scattered, and I've been catching up over the last day. I think if Adam asked me about like the power rank, the five worst power, media day sessions in terms of vibes, if we're going to go the other way, I think number one on the list would be the New Orleans Pelicans. And that's not just because of this, but it is heavily influenced by this. Zion looks cut. Like, they've done the before and after pictures on Twitter, and it is ridiculous. Zion looks like a beast. That's a problem for Denver. Denver had a lot of problems with Zion, understandably, when he played. Denver's success against the Pelicans was largely when Zion was not there. It was a little bit of a problem. If you remember the Christmas Day game 2 years ago, that was an issue. The Pelicans, I think, might wind up being the team that surprises everybody. I kind of think the Pelicans might win the division. I kind of think the Pelicans might be the team that we look up and like Memphis last year and go, wow, they finished top four, or top three, or top two. The Pelicans might make a huge jump here. Zion's had a lot of time to get healthy. He clearly has actually taken the criticism of his shape into consideration. CJ McCollum is a really balancing force for them in terms of locker room leadership. I have a lot of questions about Brandon Ingram still. I'm still not sold on Brandon Ingram as a 1B. I think Brandon Ingram thinks of himself as a 1A. I think that's going to cause problems. There are all these issues, but the media day stuff was really impressive. And Willie Green specifically said they asked him, who has impressed you with their offseason? And he said Herb Jones. They had to like have guys on him constantly not to be in the gym at all times. Herb Jones is going to be a real problem. He's going to be a real problem. The Pelicans are going to be amazing, I think, this season. Not Nuggets level. I think the Nuggets will be better. I think you'll feel like the Nuggets can beat them in the playoff series. But if you're a Nuggets fan, I would look at the New Orleans Pelicans media days and be like, uh-oh. The other team, unfortunately for Nuggets fans, is probably the Clippers. Now, Nuggets fans are going to feel a lot of confidence after the 2020 bubble 3-1 comeback versus the Clippers. A lot of the players are different from that group. They've added a lot of pieces. Reggie Jackson, John Wall, Nick Batum. They've added a lot of pieces since that time. The key components the Nuggets took advantage of in that series, which were Ivica Zubac's inability to guard Jokic and the small ball options being even worse with Marcus Morris, those are still there. The Nuggets are still very well stacked against the Clippers. I would be a little bit worried about the fact that Kawhi looks like a tank. He's added a lot of muscle. The offseason workouts obviously have worked to strengthen his legs. He looks more like a power forward to me than a small forward. And that honestly is a little bit concerning because that opens up a little bit of their flexibility to play their better lineups. If Kawhi can play four at a bigger size versus bigger lineups, that opens them up to have just as much shooting and Kawhi and PG on the floor with shooting surrounding them and a center. That causes, I think, a lot of problems. Ty Lue taking over, I think, is a big part of this as well. I would caution Nuggets fans from having a excessive amount of confidence in beating the Clippers. If that's a playoff series, it will be very different than it was 2 years ago. The Nuggets are better, so are the Clippers. If that's a playoff series, that could honestly wind up being the Western Conference Finals. That's going to be a real battle. That's going to be a genuine real battle. And even with KCP and Bruce Brown, I'm not sure, like, Aaron Gordon is going to have the series of his life if it comes down to that, but that's a long way off. Some of the lesser ones that you don't have to worry about, the Houston Rockets, I thought had a really good media day. They've got a real joy in Verve. Now, I have still questions about what that's going to be like if they can't get their offense structured because they had the worst structure of any team I've watched in the offseason. San Antonio set the bar pretty low. Greg Popovich said no one should bet on this team to win the championship. It's pretty clear, like, they know where they're going. Don't think that they're like, we could really surprise some people. Don't think that's the case. Kings are interesting. Liked a lot of what I heard from Mike Brown in terms of there's an article in The Athletic that talks about what Mike Brown thinks about the roster. I'm on the Kings over. That's going to be one of my best bets for the season win totals. I think the Kings are actually going to be surprisingly decent. The Nuggets will be favored. The Nuggets should win, but this is a team that's given them problems for various reasons through the years. So just putting that on the radar now, I think the Kings are going to be surprisingly pretty okay. We talked a little bit about the Mavericks yesterday. Still worried about that Dallas situation. Christian Wood, that seems like, I just think there's a lot of capacity there. for concern. I wouldn't say I was overly like, ooh, things sound great in Dallas. It sounds like it's okay. You know, we'll see how it goes. They seem like they've been, Adam and I talked about, sometimes you just come out media day like, okay, well, not good, not bad, just kind of there. It's how I felt about the Mavericks outside of the Christian Wood stuff. Minnesota was interesting from the perspective that Rudy Gobert talked about how he's excited to play big to big. And he said, because I think I can pass. I thought that was really interesting because Rudy's successful in international play, I genuinely wonder if that might be an opportunity. We saw the Gobert and Favors lineups work really well, and those were always hard on Denver. I wonder if that might actually be a thing that works this year is big-to-big passing between Gobert and Towns. That gives Gobert an opportunity to actually impact the game offensively with the ball in his hands, which, to my opinion, he has almost no ability to do so because he can't hit a hook shot. But if he can actually draw some attention and pass to another big underneath, that actually might be a little bit of a difficulty point. Not, you know, look, again, I like the way the Nuggets match up in there because I think Jokic just neutralizes their best defensive player. But ultimately, the Wolves, I would say, came out of media day pretty well, all things concerned. So that's a look around the Western Conference and what I thought about their media days. When we come back, we got some questions from folks, and we'll get to all those and more when we come back on Locked On Nuggets. Back here on Locked On Nuggets, thanks for joining us and making us part of your day. And your first listen every day, make sure your second listen is Locked On Fantasy Basketball with Josh Lloyd. It is the most popular fantasy basketball show on the internet. Josh is amazing. He's an absolute genius. He's got an incredible Australian accent. Make sure to download. If you're playing fantasy basketball, you have to be listening to Locked On Fantasy Basketball. Let's get some questions from folks because I asked for some questions over on Twitter and got some there, and we'll get to some folks in the comments as well. Jokic's Delicious Revenge asks, what will this combo need to average in the entire playoffs to win the finals? MPJ, points per game and rebounds, Jamal, PAR, and Jokic, PAR. In the playoffs, I'll genuinely tell you that I don't think there's a combo threshold. For me, it's entirely about, can you get to an offensive efficiency mark? I think the Nuggets are going to need to average about 115 offensively throughout the playoffs to get there. It's a high mark because the playoffs get tougher defensively, but that's going to be their strength. I think that this may be a case where the Nuggets defense is better in the regular season, but it's still going to struggle in the playoffs, but it could struggle in the playoffs and be good enough if their offense is clicking. You're going to need, honestly, these numbers are not the ones I would worry about. The numbers I would worry about are things like KCP's 3-point percentage, Aaron Gordon's field goal percentage, Bones Highland's assist to turnover ratio. Those are the numbers that I would be really keyed in on. I'm actually pretty confident in Joker and Jamal by that point. Y'all know how I feel about MPJ, right? MPJ can win you a series. MPJ can lose you a series. I'm not going to put standards on MPJ because I don't think it's fair, especially coming off of all the injury history. If MPJ shoots 45% in the playoffs, yeah, they're going to win a lot of games. If they win 40%, if he shoots 40%, they're going to be pretty good, but you're going to need to go ahead and keep up on the defensive side, and these things are complicated. Matchups matter more than almost anything in the playoffs. Carlos asked, did anyone on media day ask the players about their thoughts on Monte and Will's tenure in Denver? No, it's tough because it's been so long and you have so many things on your radar. I think there's probably going to be time for that in one of the practices, and I'll try and see if I can't get some quotes on that. I think it'd be a good opportunity. You know, you just don't have time to really hit on those. Malone has always been really effusive about his praise for those guys. You know, he misses them. They've been grateful for those contributions. I think those were mentioned in previous pressers, but no time for them at that time. Flo asked, what do you think of the players being so vividly against the new take foul, and what could be the more important changes they were referring to? I don't know what changes they wanted to actually have happen. Jokic didn't want to get in trouble, which I understand. So their take on the take foul was that the referees can't determine whether it was a genuine attempt at a play that resulted in a foul or if it was an intentional one. Jamal's issue was that you can't really tell whether something's in transition. He's like, if I turn the ball over at midcourt, is that automatically a transition opportunity? I think the take foul is one of those, you know it when you see it. It is going to cause problems when, if the officials don't automatically call it, the team that was fouled is going to be like, why isn't that a take foul? I was out in front. Why isn't that a take foul? I do think there's going to be a little bit of that. I think the interpretation of it is going to be concerning. I ultimately, I don't care. Like, don't reach. Don't reach. Won't be taught. I don't. The take fouls were obnoxious last season, and it took away from really good basketball. You want these breakaway opportunities. You just do. And if you can't get your defense set, like, hey, here's the thing. Don't turn the ball over as much, because that killed you all season long last year. And it's killed you historically. Don't turn the ball over. I will say the new take foul rules do hurt Denver, and I would say Golden State the most. Based off of their play styles, Denver and Golden State are two teams, I think, that are in contention, at least. They're going to be hurt most by the new rules. Jonathan says giving refs more subjectivity might not be the best thing. I agree, but most of the game is subjectivity anyway, and we're never going to be happy with officiating. We're just never going to be. No one, media, fans, players. We're never going to be happy with it. Evan says calling flops, that's what the league needs. I don't know if you want that as a Nuggets fan. Just going to tell you, because Jokic got really good at it last season. Jokic's delicious revenge had another question. How is the redesign of this team by adding the big defensive wings affect how the Nuggets might approach the trade deadline? Has the front office said anything about other players they might want to add? No. The intention for this team is to be the one that they have in May. If they are making trades, it's because of injury or something has gone terribly wrong or a player is unhappy with his role. Those are the only reasons I can see for a trade. They built this team with very much intention to get there. Biggest trade candidate would be Zeke. You know, if he can't do the job that they're, if he can't make the leap that they're hoping for, and another team wants to take a risk on him in exchange for a player that they need to move, he would be the most likely to be dealt. November in Denmark says likelihood of Zeke Bones Vlacco playing without reactivating their injuries. Bones had ankle issues, Zeke issues with his knees and hamstring, and Vlacco with his foot. Not saying they are injury prone, but how the Nuggets handle. They're going to play fewer minutes this season, right? Like, Bones won't have to play as much because Faku was unplayable. And so if Monte was hurt, then Bones had to play a lot, or just like Monte was playing a ton of minutes. So if Bones is like a little, if his ankle is a little sore and he's still going to play and Jamal's good to go by midseason, Jamal can play a little bit more. It's also why you have Ish, right? So you have a little bit more of that. I'll just say this. I'm not down on Vlacco Chanchar. I'm not. I just don't know what the role is. Vlacco's role seems to go way up and way down. Maybe he has a bigger role this season. Maybe he has less of a role this season. I don't know how that's going to go. Zeke, the injury stuff is real. The injury concerns with Zeke are significant. If he gets hurt, they're going to be in trouble. I've circled that backup position. If DeAndre Jordan's unplayable, if DeAndre is right, and he is not, in fact, you know, 45, if DeAndre comes in and gives them good minutes, which I know no one believes is going to happen. I don't either. But if DeAndre comes in and gives them good minutes, then Zeke can have these injuries and it's not going to be an issue. I am worried about the front court depth. It's the one area, as we talk about that positional flexibility, they just don't have it. So that might be one thing that they would have to add midseason, and like just like they did last year. Brennan says, do you feel like yesterday shed any light on likely backup 4 and 5 rotation? Talked about that one. CMJ says, the vibes are honestly so good so far. I'm even warning to DeAndre somehow. My expectations are too high. As a longtime Nuggets fan, it makes me uncomfortable. Talk me down. The West is really good. But that's the answer, is that the West is really good. The Western Conference is still stacked. Regular season, you need to have high expectations for the regular season. If this team wins less than 47 games, it's a failure. If they win less than 50 games, it's a mild failure. That should be the bar. If they win 51, I'm honestly going to be like, yeah, it's fine. Depending on seeding. But you should have high expectations. You don't get a lot of seasons where you get to have the expectations like you do this season. You should absolutely have this here. Jokic is good at flopping or drawing fouls on the perimeter, Jonathan says. Not shooting fouls. That's why he's not shooting the same amount of free throws. A little bit. He got better last season. He got a lot better at drawing free throws second half of the season. I joked that it was because he hung out with Luka Doncic. Kind of not a joke. I do genuinely wonder if Luka gave him some tips. Najee by Nature says, when's the last time you traveled to cover the Nuggets? It would have been this year, Najee. I was planning on going to San Diego. I talked to my editor about going. I had plans to go. To be honest with you guys, I'm still dealing with COVID. I had COVID 5 weeks ago is when I first came down positive. yesterday I was in Denver for media day for a couple hours and drove home, and I was struggling the entire day. I'm on an inhaler. My lung capacity is really poor, so I can't justify traveling right now. I just can't. I can't risk getting sick again, whether it was not just from COVID, but something else, because COVID is obviously less likely after my infection. I get really tired. I go for walks with my wife, and I used to be able to do those after I went for a run. And if I go for a walk with my wife, I'm exhausted. So I'm really struggling. And look, I'm sad because I really did. I wanted to cover the Nuggets for Action Network because I genuinely think this is the team with the most upside from a futures perspective. I cover betting over at Action. And if you're looking at futures markets, this is the team to look at: division, championship, Western Conference. So I was pretty bummed. You know, I think it's possible I'll probably cover the Nuggets in the playoffs if they go deep. I'm planning on covering playoff games on the road again this spring. So that's probably going to be the answer. Okay, that's going to wrap it up for Locked On Nuggets. Sorry to end with a bummer, but thanks for joining us, everybody. Hope you guys have yourselves a great day. Adam is at training camp, so make sure to follow Adam on Twitter at Adam_Mahrez. He and I will... I'm sorry I don't have a firm schedule. He and I will talk today, and I'll put it out on Twitter whether we're going to do the show tonight late from his hotel, or if we're going to wait till tomorrow morning and do the usual one at 9:30. Either way, we'll have an update for you in the next 24 hours for your first lesson tomorrow morning from training camp for your Denver Nuggets. Hope you guys have yourselves a great day, and I'll see you guys again next time on Locked On Nuggets.